Sportsline.com's Alan Bell talks Titans and the NFL with a 3HL. Presented by Smooth Moving and Storage. Tuesdays at 4:15 on 104.5 The Zone.
Welcome back to the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. Authentically Nashville, locally owned, Edley's Barbecue, edleysbbq.com, the website. Chad Withrow, Paul Koharski with you. David Reed, our chairman of the board, our producer. We're going to be joined by John McClain here in just a moment. But first, Paul, some news coming down during the break on times for Titans preseason games. What can you tell us?
Yeah, they finalized that schedule, provided things go according to plan. We don't know if you'll be allowed in the building or not, but if they play according to plan, preseason opener Saturday, August 15th at Washington. That'll be a 1 o'clock kickoff. All these games are on WKRN. So open on Saturday the 15th, 1 o'clock. Central, Saturday, the 22nd of August, the Giants here. That's a 7 o'clock start. Saturday, a week later, the 29th of August, Tampa Bay on the road. That's 6 p.m. start. That, to me, is the game that will most likely be preceded by training camp work together. John Robinson and Jason Light, the two GMs. Friends. Robinson worked under Light down there, and that's where he was hired from. The finale on a short week, Thursday, September 3rd, Chicago here, and that's a 7 o'clock start also on WKRN. So the two home games, Saturday the 22nd against the Giants at 7 o'clock, Thursday, September 3rd, Bears here at 7 o'clock. I don't know if Vrabel said he was open to two get-togethers during training camp in the preseason, if things allowed for it. I don't see any automatic connection. He doesn't. Joe Judge with the Patriots didn't overlap with Vrabel there. So I don't know out of Washington, the Giants, or Chicago what the logical or natural connection is. It may be just somebody reaching out. But Tampa Bay is an obvious one.
John McClain from the Houston Chronicle joins us every Tuesday and Friday on the show, and he is with us now. John, how are things in Houston?
Everything's great, guys. How are you?
Doing very well. I want to start with this, John. You kind of said this in passing, but you said it definitively on the show on Tuesday about Bud Adams' desire to call the team the Pioneers and not the Titans. That quote got picked up by a few people. Mike Keith was actually asked about it today on the Wake Up Zone on 104.5 The Zone. And he basically confirmed what you said, that Bud Adams really liked that name more than anyone else, including the league, and that he could confirm that, in fact, Bud Adams did love that name. Did you know that story at the time that it was happening? And it's certainly caused quite a stir with Titans fans out here, and they're feeling like they dodged a bullet that the team's not named the Pioneers.
Yeah, I wrote it at the time, talked about it on the radio. It was a big deal here. It was a big deal up there, but I guess people don't remember it as much because I don't think it got a lot of run up there. But he wanted Pioneers. The league was ready to go with Pioneers. And I think it got out. I don't remember if it was the Memphis Commercial Appeal or Memphis Talk Show. I can't remember. Somewhere in Memphis. And Bud wanted to keep it quiet, make it a big surprise. So he went with number two, which was the Titans.
It's fascinating, and then you even wrote about it at the time. But, yeah, it's gotten a big response. Something else gotten a big response has been James Harrison appearing on the Going Deep podcast where he was asked about his biggest fine he received during his career. It was a $75,000 fine for a hit on Muhammad Massaquah of the Browns in 2010. And what has people talking, John, is that Harrison said that Mike Tomlin then handed him an envelope of money after the NFL levied that fine. What do you think about this story? And James Harrison and Mike Tomlin and the Steelers.
Well, first of all, Cadillac, I think that when I read the story originally, it was clear he meant that Tomlin was helping him offset the fine with an envelope. It had to be a big envelope to have $75,000 in it. So he didn't say what size envelope it was. So I doubt it's coming out of Tomlin's pocket. Probably came from the Steelers. And then there were a lot of people that took it to mean that Tomlin was paying him a bounty for hitting somebody hard which he tried to clarify today. And, of course, the Steelers owner said Tomlin didn't do that, but I don't think he made it up. And but I don't think for a minute it was a bounty. I think he was trying to help the guy pay his fine, and it was against the league rules for players to do that. But, of course, then, I mean, for anybody with a team to do that for a player when they're fined by the league, but there's not anything the league's going to do to the player for something that happened 10 years ago.
Sean Payton was pretty outspoken about that based on having suffered for bounty gate and sitting out a year, losing a year's salary. Was on the radio, I think, with Lock M4 and said, there's no way they're going to look into that. That his wasn't so much that so much time had passed, but that the league's not interested in such a story as compared to how it was interested in his. What'd you think of that?
I thought that was pretty stupid statement. His was pertinent. It was when it happened. Greg Williams was involved. They had Greg on audio for the crew that was over there filming a Steve Gleason story, and they were in a room when Greg said about going for the ACL and talking about where the ACL is and all that. They had that on tape, and that was a huge story. Well, this one's 10 years later. I think Peyton's still very bitter about his team getting caught and him getting suspended for that season. He came across to me like a little pouty Pete.
Phone lines are open. If you want to jump in, any NFL question for John McClain, fair game, 615-737-1045, 737-1045. John, Logan Ryan appeared on Good Morning Football earlier this week on NFL Network, said he's considering every team that's not the Titans because the Titans didn't even offer to re-sign him, but specifically talked about the New York Jets and the report out there about they're close to signing him. Another possible team that's been mentioned has been the Dolphins. What do you think about Logan Ryan at this point in his career and the possible fit with either one of those former AFC East rivals of his old team, the Patriots?
John, at this point in his career, cornerback, he's 32, right? 32-year-old cornerback. He's not going to get big money. He's going to have to go where he can get the most money because it'll be, in all likelihood, his last contract. So I'm assuming when Ryan does sign, it will be for the best deal he can possibly get financially. Whether it's the Jets or the Dolphins, you know, he knows the Dolphins coaches. That might be the best place to go for him. They shouldn't be as good as the Jets. The Jets got their quarterback in place and Adam Gase's second season. So I don't see either one of them being a threat to win the division. But if I'm him, you know, if I had a choice of where to live, I'd rather live in South Florida. But I think it'll come down to money, as most contracts do.
Are any Texans together now? We talked to Johnny Smith last week here, who's just coincidentally also in South Florida. Ryan Tannehill's down there. They get together a few times a week and work out. We know Lamar Jackson's with Hollywood Brown. They're also in South Florida. They're working out. I would think these combinations have a real chance to have a real advantage if and when games start. From having worked route trees and stuff together. And I imagine there are combinations scattered around the country who are going to be very popular fantasy selections.
There are players who are working out together here, mainly doing the physical training of it. But especially the receivers with DeAndre Hopkins, they have a place where they've showed on Instagram that they're working out, but everybody else is working out at home. And I think the players believe they're going to be able to get back in their facilities in June and start working because the virtual program has been extended through the end of the month. But I don't have any idea about everybody. I know Deshaun Watson's moved around some working with different players, but I don't know about all of them because we can't communicate with most of them.
Phone lines are open for your NFL questions for John McClain, one of the two chances you get all week to talk to a legend, the general himself, John McClain of the Houston Chronicle. All questions fair game, except if you ask what was the name of his former band. He will not answer that. Everything else he'll answer for you at 615-737-1045, 737-1045. Your phone calls for John McClain next. This is the Midday 180 queued up by Edley's Barbecue.
The Zone thanks all first responders and their efforts towards the COVID-19 pandemic.
I want to thank all the nurses and doctors out there in hospitals around the country.
You're the real MVPs.
You know, leave their family in their house while they going weeks and weeks trying to help us and keep us safe. That's amazing.
104.5 The Zone. The Zone. The Zone.
It's the Midday 180 queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. Edley's Barbecue, authentically Nashville, locally owned. Also owners of Poncho and Lefty's Cantina. And they've got two new family-style options for you, including it's raining tacos, 12 shells, meat, toppings, rice, beans, chips, salsa for $35, served hot and ready to eat. John McClain is with us every Friday. Phone lines are open if you've got an NFL question for John McClain. At 615-737-1045, 737-1045. And let's go to the phones. Joey will lead us off this segment with questions for John McClain. Joey, welcome in. You're on the Midday 180.
Hey, guys. So, John, I was just curious with Deshaun Watson and his quarterback coach kind of stirring up some trouble on Twitter this past week by saying that the Chicago Bears never talked to him or anything. I was just wondering how much of a hornet's nest has that stirred up?
Nothing at all in Houston because we don't give a rat's, you know what. But I tell you what, he tweeted that. And then I know Rich Eisen pulled up quotes in which Watson had mentioned Chicago in a list of teams. So we have been unable to talk to Watson since the playoff loss to Kansas City. At some point we will, and we'll ask him to clarify. Was he talking about a visit like he made to Houston and some other teams where he spent a day there? Or was he also including 15 minutes at the combine? But too many people came back and said the Bears talked to him, so we still don't know exactly what he meant, and he hasn't clarified.
Well, and John, we have John Feinstein on our show weekly, and it was his tweet that started the whole thing, and he was quoting Doug Williams from one of his books about race in the quarterback position. And then Doug Gottlieb of Fox Radio started going after John Feinstein, saying it was ridiculous. And that's where Deshaun Watson replied to Doug Gottlieb in that. And we asked John Feinstein about it, and he made it clear that he was quoting Doug Williams on it. But I believe Doug Williams has since backed off that statement of what he said about race playing an issue with Trubisky going second. So difficult to know exactly who to follow in this story with everything that was being said.
Well, I can tell you this, Doug Williams doesn't have a clue about what was going on in Chicago Bears front office with Ryan Pace when he made that deal. I was listening yesterday to scouting reports from Daniel Jeremiah and Lewis Riddick, and they were saying good things about Trubisky right before that draft, their scouting report. The big knock against him is he was a one-year starter. Well, now they take guys who are one-year starters, Dwayne Haskins being the most recent that I can think of. It's not that big of a deal, but I think a lot of times if you look at talent around Trubisky, he doesn't have as near as much talent as Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson have had around him. Now, I don't think, of course, he had been a success, and they obviously think that this could be probably going to be his last year there. But when you start talking about race, you know, that's one reason I stay away from that, because if you don't know it beyond a shadow of a doubt, you ought to put a lid on it.
Pepper Rogers died. Bud Adams decided to link up with Pepper Rogers when the Titans were going to play in Memphis. Initially, they planned for two seasons. Obviously, it was such a failure, they reduced it to one. Did you deal with Pepper Rogers at all as the Oilers were heading out of town and setting up to play that year in Memphis?
My favorite Pepper Rogers story was, if you guys get Fisher on, he'll tell you this story, that one day, right in the middle of a training camp, and I don't know if it was the first one or second one, they told Fisher, by the way, pack it up, we're going to Memphis to Rhodes College. And Fisher's like, huh? What do you mean we're going to train? We're training here. No, Pepper's got to set up to train. I don't remember if it was a week or what, at Rhodes College. So they had to load everything up, and they're driving on the buses, and all of a sudden, oops, we got to stop I think it was in Jackson. They had to pull off in Jackson because they had a band out, politicians and everything, and they had to get out and make speeches all because of Pepper. Pepper was very influential with Bud because Pepper was a great talker, former head coach, multiple college and pro teams, not in the NFL. And at the time, you guys know, he was a mover and a shaker in Memphis. And he was a character, too. And I didn't know him very well at all, but I heard great stories about him. When I talk about Pepper Rogers, that guy was a character.
I don't remember the timeline precisely, but Pepper reported directly to Bud. And then they, as they did often back then, they shuffled the organizational tree. And so John Glennon was covering the team for the commercial appeal then. And we were in the trailer, the press trailer, the ratty press trailer back at that Bellevue temporary facility. And so we had to make phone calls in front of each other all the time. So John calls Pepper Rogers to get Pepper Rogers' reaction to this announcement that reassigned Pepper Rogers where he was going to report to Don McLaughlin. This was where Don kind of consolidated some power. And Pepper was one of the people reassigned that was now going to report to Don instead of reporting to Bud. And so John tells Pepper this, and Pepper says, I don't know what you're talking about. I always have to do the accent.
Yeah, it's reference. The same accent for everyone, too. Yeah. It's great.
I don't know what you're talking about, John. I report to Bud. I've always reported to Bud. And John says, well, Pepper, I'm reading the press release here. It says that you now report to Don. And he says, well, I guess I report to Donnie then. I like Donnie. Donnie's a good guy.
The thing about the people that could tell the best Pepper Rogers stories would be Don McLaughlin and Steve Underwood, because they're behind the scenes stuff. And I know this, when Bud got Pepper involved, everybody was just rolling their eyes because they had enough to deal with in Nashville and trying to play in Memphis with Pepper having Bud's ear, which he did at the time.
John, Monday Night Football, changing over the booth again. Joe Tessitore, Booger McFarland now out. They're going to stay with ESPN. Reports are ESPN is going to stay in-house with this next hire. Steve Levy is the top name that we've heard for play-by-play. Dan Orlovsky, Louis Riddick, some different names thrown out there for Monday Night Football. What's the best option in your mind in terms of where they should be looking, either in-house at ESPN or outside?
I like the two you mentioned, Orlovsky, who I got to know when he played here, and he was a really bad quarterback, and then Louis Riddick. Riddick played for 7 seasons. He was a scout in personnel departments, so he comes from a player and a pro personnel man's perspective. Dan Orlovsky comes from a player's perspective. I think both of those guys are really good at what they do, which is analysis on studio shows, and I think they'd probably be pretty good on Monday Night Football. As for Steve Levy, he's been around there forever. You know, the guy you'd like to see do it would be Mike Tirico, but he's not, I guess he don't want to do it. But I got no issue with Steve Levy. I think that would be a good threesome. And a lot of people didn't like Booger McFarland. I did. I liked him. He had opinions, whether you liked it or not. When he was with the Buccaneers, he was a really good interview. Warren Sapp stole most of the headlines because he was the other tackle, but McFarland was good. Now they're going to put him in studio shows. He's still under contract. But I'd like to see Orlovsky and Riddick.
Lane, Houston Chronicle, joins us every Tuesday and Friday. Love getting John's insight, his stories, covering the league for as long as he has. And again, confirmed by Voice of the Titans, Mike Keith. And John wrote about it then. The Titans were going to be the pioneers had it not been for someone in Memphis breaking the story and Bud Adams changing course and naming them the Tennessee Titans. John, it's always a pleasure. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you on Tuesday.
Hey, Chad, Paul, thank you guys very much. I hope you stay safe and have a great weekend, you and all your listeners. Thank you.
Same to you. John McClain, every Tuesday and Friday on the show. Will Bowling, our Zone Media Insider, will join us to wrap up the week when we return. It's the Midday 180 queued up by Edley's Barbecue.